VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us this week here on Crosstalk as we look toward our National Day of Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday, and trust that it will be a special time, of course, of a reminder to give God thanks for not only who He is, but for the many wonderful blessings that He's provided for us. We are going to focus in on Israel today, and there is much in the news as it pertains to Israel. When you think about it, two elections have now taken place this year and have failed to elect a new prime minister. So what happens next? While this is going on, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, soon to be tried for corruption with charges of bribery. Also, controversy erupted last week when the Trump administration announced that the United States it's going to now recognize the legal status of Israeli communities in the West Bank. The Palestinian Authority announced that they're going to be having a day of rage that gets underway tomorrow. Rallies, marches, protests. And meanwhile, there have been wide-scale strikes on Iranian forces in Syria. Well, informing us and commenting on these varied issues, we welcome back David Rubin. David is the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. That's the region of Samaria known to much of the world as the West Bank. He is a founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund that was established to heal the trauma of terror victim children after he and his three-year-old son were seriously wounded in a terror attack. David's been known as a trusted voice in Israel. He's the author of many books, including The Israeli Tsunami, Peace for Peace in the New Middle East, and his latest title, Trump and the Jews. His websites are ShilohIsraelChildren.org and DavidRubinIsrael.com. David, welcome back to Crosstalk.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good to be with you.
Well, there is certainly much going on. I've recited some of those issues, but I'd like to begin with the elections. April 2019, an election for our prime minister failed to yield a winner, and so another election was held in September, and again, both sides fell short of a victory. I think I'm going to have you comment where we're going with all of this, but for those not familiar with how elections are conducted in Israel, if you could just briefly explain them, how they take place, and how it is that two elections have failed to produce a winner.
Okay, well, Israel is a country that has a parliamentary system. Okay, just so for people who don't know, okay, we're a tiny country. We're about the size of New Jersey. We have a parliamentary system. The name of the Israeli parliament is the Knesset. It has 120 members, 120 Knesset members, and after the election, each of the parties is allocated a certain amount of seats in the Knesset based on the percentage of the vote that they received, and then the leading party, the head of the leader of the leading party is usually the one who is appointed to form a governing coalition, meaning he has to cobble together a majority of 61 or more members of the Israeli Knesset in order to make a majority coalition. Well, that's normally the way it works. And this time, in the last two elections, in fact, there were two elections in the past year, and in each of those elections, the two major parties were deadlocked. Neither of them was able to put together a majority coalition. And for that reason, after about 45 days, it was decided to go to new elections. And new elections were held. And again, there was this gridlock where the two major parties got almost identical amounts of votes, and neither of those parties was able to put together a majority coalition. So we've been through this twice already. Two times we've been in this movie in 1 year. And again, we have just had another period of over a month when neither of those two parties was able to form a coalition, and now we may be going to third elections. Now, while this is happening, the prime minister has been indicted for potential bribery.
Okay, we're going to get into that that indictment here in just a bit, but let's circle back on some of these elections. And you mentioned that we may be looking at a third election, but would that not yield the same results? I'm going to have you explain two things. What is causing the gridlock to take place, and would not that third election just bring us to the same point where we are today?
Okay, both good questions. So the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, who was, by the way, the longest-serving prime minister in Israel's history, because we don't have term limits here, at least not yet. So he is currently prime minister, and he remains prime minister through this whole election and potential government-forming process. But he is the leader of the right-of-center Likud party, which is, you know, the biggest right-of-center party. And then there is Benny Gantz of the left-of-center blue and white party. Now, those are the two leading parties. All right, so we're now in that situation where Gantz, where Netanyahu didn't succeed in forming a governing coalition. Gantz didn't succeed in forming a governing coalition, and we're on to round three. We're heading towards the third election. Now, how do we prevent that from happening again? Well, there are a lot of ideas that are being proposed. One is that the Likud is discussing having primaries with the possibility that maybe someone else would win the primaries and Netanyahu would step down and somebody would take his place, somebody who perhaps would have a better chance of forming a majority coalition. Second possibility, there is a bill in the Knesset that is being discussed right now and will be proposed very soon, which says that if after these third elections we have the same results and similar results and nobody can form a coalition, then there will be a direct election for prime minister, not, you know, more like the American system, not in the parliamentary system, mm-hmm. where you vote for a party and not a person. And whoever wins that direct election for prime minister would be given an additional 12 seats in the Knesset, and that would be allotted to his coalition, whatever right-wing or left-wing coalition he puts together. And in that case, there would be a stable government. So that's a bill that is in the Knesset and maybe voted on in the coming weeks.
You had mentioned possibly a primary within the Likud. Is there anybody on the horizon that you see, David, that could perhaps secure the necessary number to form that coalition government?
Well, there are two individuals there's only one who has announced his actual candidacy in those primaries, and that is Knesset member Gideon Sar, who is a longtime member of the Likud, and he was a minister in the Knesset. He took a break from politics, but he returned a couple of years ago, and he is considered to be a leading opponent of Netanyahu's, or at least an opponent in the primaries. They did have an okay relationship for many years. Netanyahu is not happy that Sar has declared his candidacy. The foreign minister, Israel Katz. He's not considered to be a major contender, though, even though he's foreign minister. The third is the former mayor of Jerusalem, Nir Barkat, who was a very successful mayor, and he's recently thrown his hat into national politics as a member of the Likud. He's still backing Prime Minister Netanyahu, but if Netanyahu leaves the scene, then Barkat certainly would be a candidate, and probably a very good one. And there is a fourth interesting potential leader. There's a woman named Ayelet Shaked, who's a woman with very strong right-wing views, and she's very highly regarded as former justice minister. And she's not officially a member of the Likud, though, even though she has toyed with the idea of becoming a full-fledged member of the Likud and possibly would have a lot of support.
David Rubin is our guest today, and ladies and gentlemen, he's speaking from Israel today as we do this program. And David, as you had stated earlier, while this is going on, now the potential of facing the third election, there have been charges of corruption and bribery brought out against the prime minister. The attorney general of Israel said that he was, this was a very heavy-hearted decision. Tell us what's happening. What is the alleged bribery charge that's come out here? Comment on these charges.
Netanyahu has been accused of pushing through legislation that was seen as favorable to the Bezeq telecommunications giant. And you have to understand, Bezeq, the big telecommunications giant in Israel, has the owner of Bezeq also owns the Walla internet news site. And so the news site is very influential. Netanyahu has long had problems that perhaps would even make President Trump feel envious. That President Trump, has all these problems with the media, right?
Yes.
And the media clearly in the United States is very biased against President Trump, with some notable exceptions. So with Netanyahu, it's possibly even worse. It depends on how you're looking at it, but in many ways, Netanyahu has shared many of the same challenges. And so he was trying to get favorable coverage, or so the allegation says, that he's trying to get favorable coverage from this news site, and that the owner of the news site, who happens to also be the CEO of the Bezeq telecommunications giant, made a deal, they say, with Netanyahu, whereby Netanyahu would grant legislation that's favorable to Bezeq in exchange for more positive media coverage by the Bezeq-owned Walla news site. Now, whether that's actual bribery, because he's not actually getting money, has been a matter of some dispute. But the indictment has been filed.
We're going to pick up with this after the break. David Rubin is our guest from Israel. Websites, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, DavidRubinIsrael.com. More discussion in 60 seconds. You're listening to the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, I've heard that men have one less rib than women due to the creation of Eve from Adam's rib. Is this correct?
No, it's not, Chris. This is an urban legend that's patently untrue. Men and women have the same number of ribs. The number of ribs is controlled by genetics, and this supplies the same number of ribs, even if one is taken out. The same sort of thing happens if one loses a hand in an accident. If he later has children, that child will have hands. Even though this legend has grown up in some circles, the Bible never even gives a hint that this might be true. The Bible is not a legend. It's an accurate record. We best not impose our own legendary biases on the Back to Genesis truth.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Our guest today is in Jerusalem, David Rubin. He's a former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. And we're also the author of Trump and the Jews. Again, his website, ShilohIsraelChildren.org. We'll talk about that here in a bit, but also DavidRubinIsrael.com. David, we were talking about these charges of corruption, charges of bribery brought out against the prime minister. The prime minister has responded. This is an attempted coup against him, that this indictment, he said, has stemmed from false accusations, a tainted investigation. He has called for an investigation of the investigators. From your perspective, is there legitimacy to what the prime minister is saying, that this is a witch hunt, or is there something that really needs to flesh out here?
Well, it may sound like a contradiction, but I don't think it's a witch hunt. I think that Avichai Mandelblit, the Attorney General, who's highly respected, mm-hmm. and was appointed by Netanyahu himself, it's important to point out that he's known to be an honest individual, and he's highly respected as Attorney General, always has been. On the other hand, I don't know if I'd call it a witch hunt, but the left in Israel has been out to get Netanyahu for many years, and once they had this opportunity, so they're going after his throat, and there's no fairness here in the way that they view this. It's become a vendetta just to bring Netanyahu down. Now, whether the charges are legitimate, well, that's a matter of some debate, because there is the point of some that say that, you cannot be charged for bribery. It's not considered bribery if the person giving the favors is not receiving money for it. In this case, he's just receiving positive media coverage, according to the alleged charges. Mm-hmm. And so there are some, including Alan Dershowitz, who, you know, as people in America know, is one of the top legal experts in the United States. He said that you can't be charged for bribery if you're not receiving any financial remuneration for it. So there is that argument, and you know that's for a court of law to figure out.
Mm-hmm. David, I'm sure you've been keeping informed on what's happening in U.S. politics here with the impeachment inquiry with President Trump, and knowing that you've been following this. Do you see any comparison or contrast with what's happening there compared to what's happening here?
Well, the investigation and the impeachment hearings against President Trump, to me, from what I have seen, it clearly seems to be a witch hunt. Yes, I think that I can say unqualified. It is a witch hunt. There doesn't seem to be anything there, and especially when you put it side by side with the statements of Joe Biden, who boasted that. That he interfered in the Ukrainian as vice president, that he interfered in the firing of a Ukrainian prosecutor on in order to help his son, who had this position, this high paying position that he was clearly unqualified for. That there's just too much corruption on the left that isn't being addressed at all, you know. And whereas in Israel, there have been individuals on the left side of the spectrum that have gone to jail for corruption. I don't know if we could say that it's exactly the same. There are too many similarities, of course, because you have this vendetta of the left, which is, you know, they're out for Trump's blood, they're out for Netanyahu's blood, mm-hmm. but at the same time, there are some differences in the in the specific legal issues at hand.
Can he remain as prime minister under the indictment?
That too is something kind of interesting. In Israel, a prime minister cannot be removed from his position because of an indictment. If he's found guilty, that's in the trial, that's something else. Mm-hmm. But it is possible for him to remain prime minister during the period when he has just merely been indicted.
So would you see, though, that perhaps his image is being tainted by this, that may even spell doom for another election for the Likud party if he is the candidate?
Well, that is one of the main problems. And his potential opponent in the primaries, Gideon Sar, has pointed that out, that it would be very difficult for Netanyahu to win the next election and to get a majority coalition together. It would be nearly impossible because he has been tainted somewhat by this indictment, whether it's justified or not.
David Rubin, our guest, he is in Israel as we speak. David, you're well aware last week President Trump announced that the United States is now going to recognize the legal status of Israeli communities in the West Bank. He's reversing something that happened during the Carter administration. How significant a decision is this from President Trump?
It is enormously significant. You have to understand that, yes, President Trump is the one who moved the American embassy to Jerusalem and recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Yes, President Trump is the one who recognized the strategic and critically strategic Golan Heights in the north of Israel as Israel's sovereign territory. And yes, this is the same President Trump who closed down the PLO office in Washington, who withheld aid to the Palestinian Authority until they stopped paying terrorists to commit terrorist attacks against Israeli civilians. President Trump has done all of those things and more. But this move, recognizing the legality of Israeli communities, so-called settlements, in Judea and Samaria, the so-called West Bank, is a tremendous, tremendous move. Now, I have explained in quite significant detail and very clearly in my book, Trump and the Jews, why Judea and Samaria in the biblical heartland of Israel is sovereign Israeli territory, should be recognized as sovereign Israeli territory, and should be annexed by Israel. So, based on all the historical reasons and the religious reasons and the political reasons, there is no question about it. So President Trump and Secretary Pompeo merely reiterated what I wrote in the book, Trump and the Jews, and reiterated it in a public way so that the United States government is now bound by that. And it's a very, very important, a very, very moral move. And, of course, it took political courage, which Trump certainly has become known for.
Yeah, I saw a statement from the prime minister there who said, this policy reflects a historical truth that the Jewish people are not foreign colonialists in Judea and Samaria. In fact, we're called Jews because we're the people of Judea. Israel is deeply grateful to President Trump, Secretary Pompeo, and the entire U.S. administration for their steadfast position supporting truth and justice, and calls upon all responsible countries who hope to advance peace to adopt a similar position. There's no hiding the prime minister's thoughts there. I mean, he was very outspoken, complimentary of the move that President Trump made there.
And a clear majority of Israelis identify with what the prime minister said.
Now, we understand that there are more than 100 Democratic members of the U.S. Congress have signed a letter against the Trump administration's decision, criticizing him for this, seeing this perhaps as a roadblock to peace taking place there. Do you see this as a turning of their backs on Israel? How do you view that?
Oh, it certainly is. You know, I've been speaking about this for years, Jim. I've been very, very concerned about this approach that says that it's that you are pro-Israel if you say that Israel has a right to exist. Well, I don't just want to exist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't just want my country to exist by the holding on to a string falling off a cliff. I want my country to thrive. I want Israel to thrive. And the only way that Israel is going to thrive is if we are allowed to claim our historical lands, if we are able to fight back against our enemies, and if much of the Democratic Party today is not supporting that, then they shouldn't be going to their voters saying that they are pro-Israel and that they're in favor of strengthening the relationship between Israel and the United States, because they clearly are not.
Hmm. And I find what's also interesting in this declaration that was made from the U.S., this comes just days after there was a ruling by the European Union Court that required Israeli products made in what they call these, and I put them in quotes, disputed territories, to carry special labels. So this really is a slap in the face to the European Union as it relates to their decision.
Sure, and you put that in quotes as disputed territories.
Yes.
But if we're quoting the European Union, they say occupied territories.
Mm-hmm.
But what they should be saying is Judea and Samaria, because if they want to be historically accurate, which obviously they don't, then they would recognize that Judea is what the southern part of the land of Israel, the part south of Jerusalem, was called in the time that the Jews were exiled from the land of Israel 2,000 years ago. And they would also call it Samaria, which is the region north of Jerusalem, which was a former kingdom of Israel when King David's former unified kingdom split in half. So Judea and Samaria are the historical lands of Israel, is the historical land of Israel, and the land of Israel without Judea and Samaria is not the land of Israel.
David Rubin, our guest here today, and I'm just going to introduce a topic here, and I know we'll have to pick it up on the other side of the break, but the Palestinian Authority, we understand, has announced for a day of rage to take place tomorrow to protest this declaration with rallies, marches, protests. They're talking about holding these in Bethlehem, Ramallah, and other locations. I'm sure you're not surprised by their reaction.
No, look, the days of rage are what people do when they have no argument. When they have no way of reasonably and rationally and historically, in an historically accurate way, explaining why they are right. Okay, so when you're not right, you have days of rage and you riot and you throw rocks and you do wild things. Just ask Al Sharpton.
We'll be back in a minute. David Rubin is our guest today here on Crosstalk, and folks, we're going to just delve into also some of the missile attacks against Israel and what's happened there since this has happened, and more information following the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
George Washington said, "It is impossible to rightly govern the world without God in the Bible." Andrew Jackson said, "That book, sir, is the rock upon which our republic rests." Theodore Roosevelt said, "A thorough knowledge of the Bible is worth more than a college education." Franklin D. Roosevelt said, "I take pleasure in commending the reading of the Bible to all who serve in the armed forces." These and over 2,000 other direct quotations revealing the godly heritage of America can now be found in America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations by William Federer. This volume of over 800 pages cites founding fathers, presidents, statesmen, state constitutions, and court decisions. This reference tool is available for a donation of $22 to VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829. Ask for America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations.
We'll be right back. You are listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. David Rubin is our guest. He's in Israel as we speak, and we are talking about the matters going on there, the elections, the allegations against the prime minister, and now more recently the Trump administration announcement that has come forth indicating that that the United States will recognize the legal status of the Israeli communities in the West Bank, Judea and Samaria. And this has caused some grief amongst the a number of Democrats now in Washington, D.C., who are have been very outraged that the president is making such a decision. The Palestinian Authority has announced a day of rage to take place tomorrow. And before I leave that topic, David, there is also some speculation that Hamas might join in and organize some protests in Gaza as well. Is there anything that you've seen develop in that front?
They might add on another few thousand people to their riots that they have every week. I'm not impressed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not impressed. The Hamas terrorists will do whatever they want. They'll always try to launch terrorist attacks against Israelis, and they will always riot. You know, those two things together is to be expected.
There have been many, many missile attacks of recent against Israel. Give us an overview of what's been happening and what is the impact of this been on Israel.
Well, there are two fronts, basically. The two major fronts that are a problem right now from a military perspective are Gaza, which is south of the areas that Israel controls right now, and there is the north, Lebanon and Syria. So the major threat is from Lebanon and Syria, because that is where Iran has set up military bases, either through their surrogate, the Hezbollah terrorist organization, or on their own through the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. And Israel has been attacking Syria repeatedly over the past couple of years, and this is something that is necessary, and it's in order to prevent them from setting up Syria as a base against Israel. And the other place that has been a threat has been Gaza, which, as you mentioned, the Hamas terrorists and, of course, the Islamic Jihad terrorists. And recently, after Israel assassinated one of the leaders of Islamic Jihad, they were firing rockets at Israel for several days until we started really responding in a strong way and stopping those rockets attacks after Islamic Jihad pleaded for a ceasefire. And really the only reason why they got that ceasefire, why they got Israel to agree to it, is because we're in the middle of these coalition negotiations that, you know, that are going nowhere right now. And that's the reason, because until we really have a stable government, so we would rather postpone the big conflict, which is coming within a matter of months, probably.
We know the Iron Dome was able to stop many missiles, but not all. And what impact has this left? Have there been injuries? Have there been deaths? Tell us of the destruction.
There have been some injuries. There have been some who were wounded, and some people wounded, mostly minor injuries, although there have been a couple of serious ones. And thank God the Iron Dome did its job and stopped about 90% of the attacks, and another 6 or 7% of the attacks ended up in the rockets ended up landing in open fields, and there were a few that landed on Israeli buildings, and that's something to be concerned about. Mm-hmm. But of course, the main problem is the psychological trauma that it causes to children who have to go running to bomb shelters every time the red alert goes, and you know, telling us that a rocket is on the way, and that's a big problem. And as you know, Jim, after my 3-year-old son and I were wounded in a terrorist attack, I founded the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, or as Americans would call it, Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, for the purpose of healing the psychological trauma of the terror victim children. And unfortunately, we in Israel have had far too many terror victim children, and not just terror victim children who've been killed or wounded or have lost family members in terror attacks, but many other children who that may not have happened to directly, but they have lost friends, they have lost neighbors, family, teachers, and you know, so if I just look at where Shiloh is located in Samaria, there isn't one child who does not know either a family member or a friend or a neighbor or a teacher who's been killed or wounded in a terrorist attack. Everyone has been affected. Everyone has been traumatized to varying degrees. And that's why the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund was formed, to heal the trauma of the terror victim children.
And David, for our listeners who'd like to get more information about the specific programs and how you're dealing with the psychological trauma and physical trauma that youth experience, what's the best way for them to get that information?
The best thing is to go directly to the website, which is Shiloh, S-H-I-L-O-H, ShilohIsraelChildren.org. ShilohIsraelChildren.org. And they can find out about our music therapy programs, our art therapy programs, our horseback riding therapy. And we have all of these different therapies on our integrated therapeutic educational campus in the heart of Shiloh, in Israel, in the biblical heartland of Israel. So I really want to encourage people to do that, to go to ShilohIsraelChildren.org and to find out more about the work of Shiloh Israel Children's Fund.
Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. If you have a question for David as it pertains to the elections, the charges against the prime minister, the declaration made here by the Trump administration, our number here, 800-733-9829. David, I was looking at Breaking Israel News, and they're reporting that relations between Jordan and Israel are at an all-time low. They say that King Abdullah told the Washington Institute for Middle East, saying, if we do not solve the Israeli-Palestinian issue, Israel cannot really be a part of the Middle East, calling it a sensitive and emotional issue. Could you comment on Israel's relations with Jordan at this time?
They're very functional. The relationship with Jordan, the relationship with Egypt, is a very proper, functional relationship. I wouldn't call it as a warm relationship. There is a cold peace, I would say, between Israel and those two countries. But it doesn't concern me. Jordan, it's in Jordan's interest to make public statements against Israel and to quietly maintain the peace.
Okay. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Julie in Pensacola, Florida, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. My question is with Netanyahu. Is he a born-again believer? I tend not to believe what the media tells me anymore because of all that's going on in America right now, but I kind of want to believe when Prime Minister Netanyahu says that he is innocent, and this isn't the first time that he's been attacked by issues. There's been some time before when his wife was accused of some things, but I just want to know if he is a born-again believer in the Lord, and then is that allowed to be in office? Okay. Are they allowed to have that kind of faith, the faith in the Lord? Jesus Christ as their Savior? Are they allowed to have that when they're a prime minister in Israel?
Any comment there, David?
Sure. Well, Prime Minister Netanyahu is Jewish Israeli, and as all prime ministers have been, and he his personal religious belief. I'm not going to get into. I know that he has Bible study once a week in the prime minister's office. But most of the Israeli prime ministers have not been particularly religious, and they do what they need to do. Israel is a country that has been moving in the direction of becoming closer to God in recent years, which is the opposite of the trend in the United States and mm-hmm. most of Western civilization.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Julie, for the call. Charlie is next in Lodi. You're on the air, Lodi, Wisconsin.
Thank you for taking my call. What an interesting show. David, what an honor to speak with you. I'm of Armenian descent, and I see a lot of similarities before the country and the people of Armenia. I kind of identify with what the Jewish people go through, and I'm wondering if you think that that might happen next with them, because this is a Christian country, isolated and alone, surrounded by enemies that want to eradicate them. Also, just a comment, I think America's got to be brought down to its knees, because as long as America is strong, Israel is strong. And as long as you have a president like President Trump, Israel is protected. God forbid something happens to that man or a liberal Democrat be elected and become an enemy of Israel all around. Well, what are your thoughts, David? And thank you again.
Thank you.
Wonderful show.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, so I think we have a couple of questions there. First was about the Armenians, and the second is about the Democrats. Did I get that right?
In essence, yes.
Okay, so, first of all, Israel is a country that, despite all the geopolitics in the Middle East with Turkey and countries like that, I can tell you that Israelis, whether it's an official declaration or not, Israelis do recognize the Armenian genocide that the Turkish carried out. So that's something that Israelis are aware of. They're also aware of the fact that the Armenian genocide, genocide against the Armenian people, was the precursor for the Holocaust. In fact, Hitler looked at the Armenian the genocide that was carried out by Turkey against Armenians and said, hey, I can do it. I can get away with it.
Well, we'll pick up with this right after the break. I have a couple open lines here at Crosstalk. Our number, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. David Rubin is with us today, speaking live from Jerusalem. Back in 1 minute.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Have you noticed all of the lawlessness at the highest levels of our government? The FBI, we have a former CIA director who admitted to voting for a communist presidential candidate, Gus Hall, that was John Brennan. You've got James Comey and Mueller as FBI director giving awards to known jihadis, the highest FBI awards to known jihadis. You've got an unconstitutional, illegal impeachment inquiry that has not followed the rules of Congress. All of this is lawlessness at the highest levels. But you know, there's also lawlessness at the street level, right? Did you know this is a communist tactic? Well known, and it's called pressure from above and pressure from below. It's all designed to have lawlessness at the highest levels of government and at the street level. And this chaos eventually will cause people to want to surrender to socialism to have a normalization of society.
covering many issues pertaining to Israel today. You're listening to Crosstalk, and David Rubin is with us. He's a former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. That's in the region of Samaria that a lot of the world refers to as being the West Bank, founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund. And as he mentioned, that was established to heal the trauma of terror victim children after he and his three-year-old son were seriously wounded in a terror attack, and shared about some of the areas that they address, the physical trauma, the psychological trauma of children, and bring about different types of therapy from art to music, horseback riding, and others to minister to those needs of children. And certainly talking also today not only about where things stand politically in Israel with the elections and perhaps the upcoming third election to take place, but also the charges of corruption and bribery that have brought out against the prime minister, and then also the statement that came forth by President Trump last week, the U.S. policy recognizing the legal status of the Israeli communities in West Bank. In defiance of what the European Union has recently decided there. But taking your questions and comments today, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. David, we have seen more action, even at the United Nations, with actions condemning Israel. This seems to become the mission of the United Nations, is what, you know, what declaration can they make next in and against Israel?
Well, the United Nations has always been a cesspool of hatred towards Israel in recent decades, and that hasn't changed at all. You have to put it in perspective. The United Nations is a country that has welcomed Iran onto the United Nations Human Rights Commission. So I think we can leave it at that.
Yeah, indeed. By the way, folks, again, I wanted to give these websites, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, ShilohIsraelChildren.org. And David, if people want to get your books, is that through your website, DavidRubinIsrael.com?
That is correct. They go to the website, DavidRubinIsrael.com, where they can get the book Trump and the Jews, or any of my other books as well, The Islamic Tsunami and Peace for Peace and others. They could also go directly to the Amazon.com site and just type in the words Trump and the Jews, and they'll have it in no time.
Okay, again, David's site is DavidRubinIsrael.com. Rubin is spelled R-U-B-I-N. Let's go to Hartford next, and Lee is calling. Lee, you're on the air.
Hi, Jim and David Rubin. Hey, just a comment, or maybe it's a question. You know, it must be frustrating for Israel to have a relationship with the United States, because one president gets in, and they're very anti-Israel. Another president gets in, and they're just very pro-Israel. And how do the Israelis feel about that? How do they deal with that on a regular basis, or every few years anyway? So that must just be very frustrating. Mm. Thanks. I'll listen off
the air. Thank you, Lee.
Well, certainly it's been like a roller coaster with President Obama followed by President Trump. So, you know, we're just enjoying it right now. You know, if I could say such a thing, it really has been a pleasure working with a president that is so pro-Israel, that really cares about the relationship between Israel and the United States and how it can benefit both of our countries. And that's a great thing. That's a great thing. So we just have to continue, and you know, we believe strongly in the rightness of our path. We know that God gave us this land, and we know that he gave it to us as a divine inheritance and something that should be treasured and cared for, and you know, we're just rebuilding according to the prophecies and hoping that all will be good, and that we can maintain that good relationship with Washington and even improve it.
David, here in the last couple of minutes, I'd like you to address a terminology that we hear so often. We hear it in the debates for the Democratic presidential candidates. We'll be hearing it in our forthcoming presidential election. We'll be hearing it in all kinds of policies. And we have just 2 minutes left. But deal with when you hear this two-state solution, and this is what will bring peace, is a two-state solution. Give us your feedback to that issue.
Well, look, there are a lot of states in the Middle East, a lot of countries in the Middle East, and, you know, when we say states, we're talking about countries, and there's only one state of Israel, and as I said, we're a country the size of New Jersey, and that's including the Golan Heights, and including Judea, and including Samaria, and there is no room within Israel to create another state and another country which will which has always been sworn to Israel's destruction. So anyone talks about this Palestinian state, there's no people that deserves to have its own state more than or less than the so-called Palestinian people. And besides, they got their name from the Romans, so what does that say?
Yeah. Well, David, you actually cover a number of these issues in your book, Peace for Peace in the New Middle East, correct?
I covered it in depth in Peace for Peace in the New Middle East, yes. And of course, in my most recent book, Trump and the Jews.
Okay. Again, folks, the websites are davidrubinisrael.com to obtain a copy of that book or information there regarding David and his writings. Also, the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund is shilohisraelchildren.org. And, David, we appreciate you staying up late. We know that it's late into the night there, but important issues that are going on for Israel. And as always, we certainly do encourage our listeners to be praying for the peace of Jerusalem.
Amen. Well, thank you, Jim. It was a pleasure, as always.
Thank you, David. And folks, again, be praying, especially tomorrow, as there are planned, protests that are to be taking place in Israel to speak out against the actions of the Trump administration, as we have made a statement now recognizing the legal status of Israeli communities in the West Bank. Again, our guest today has been David Rubin, davidrubinisrael.com, shilohisraelchildren.org. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.